everyone, and welcome back to another Bite where we rewatch the most innovative and intriguing pitches from Shark Tank. I'm Ariel, and I'm joined today by John Dick.
Hey, everybody.
Hands down, today's episode will have you asking, do these sharks even grasp the impact? This product aims to get its grip on two massive categories at once. Will our founder clinch a deal, or will he be left reaching? We'll find out after we pay some bills. Today in the tank, we have Psionic. Psionic is pitched to us by Dr. Adil Akhtar in studio with Sergeant Garrett Anderson, who's using this ability hand. He is asking for $1 million for 2%, which comes out to a whopping $50 million valuation. Psionic is a robotic limb for both humans and robots. It's a developed ability hand, which is the fastest bionic hand to market. You can control the ability hand with your muscles. It's USB rechargeable. You can even charge your phone from the USB hand, which is something of the future. It's water resistant and it's FDA registered as a medical device, and it's covered by Medicare in the US. So the initial pitch shows great product market fit, great audience. John, what are your initial thoughts going into Psionic?
I don't know, Ariel. Something seems a little off with this product. On the one hand, as you said, there's like a real problem here. Like the founder talked about the fact that what exists in the market for people who need a prosthetic like this, they're too heavy, they're too slow, they don't have touch associated with them. Mm-hmm. They're not taking advantage of what I perceive to be like the miracle of science and medical science in particular that's happening right now. And it seems like this product's incredible. It's got touch, it's got movement. A veteran who uses this product punched through a board with it. It's an incredible product.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So amazing problem in the world, incredible product. And yet he's out there crowdfunding for this product and he is coming on Shark Tank trying to get some money from some sharks for it. Like this is a product that should be able to get some pretty serious investment from pretty serious medical device investors. And so I don't know what the disconnect is between what he is trying to build and the story that he's telling and the perception by investors, but something just feels like fundamentally off here.
Yeah, there's a ton of upside. When you look at the limb prosthetic market, it's valued at $1.59 billion right now with a CAGR of 5.5%. When you think about other prosthetic leg solutions in market, you know, it's difficult to find something that costs less than $10,000. Typically, things can cost up to $70,000 or more. So to your point, John, like this is a great product in terms of like pricing, the capabilities from a technology perspective. And I think Mark kind of alluded to that at first too. You know, I think he was a little confused at the fact that they only raised $2.2 million in a year with the crowdfunding, kind of wondering why the VA isn't all over the product, like you mentioned.
Yeah. Well, products like this, Ariel, they're expensive to make. Mm-hmm. And scaling up a production capacity for a medical grade product, I think, is very expensive because you need extremely high quality control. The production facilities have to be, I'm sure, like FDA approved and meet compliance regulation and things like that. It costs him right now $1,800 to make, and he hasn't really scaled up his manufacturing. And so this is where like he would want to not take crowdfunding money to piece together a manufacturing facility. You would argue that he wants to take strategic money from a company that has expertise in this field that can actually help him build out his production capacity. And, you know, part of the reason he said that he was going down this path of doing this like crowdfunding model was he said that a lot of the sales that they're getting are actually coming from social media. And the thing that I was trying to wrap my head around is like, does his story hold up? Is it a consistent story? So is he saying like, I actually think that the problem with this market is not that there are not great products on it, but it's that the distribution model for it's very broken, that going through gatekeepers like the VA or going through more traditional medical distribution channels is not the path I want to go. I want to build a direct-to-consumer prosthetic company, in which case maybe it holds up and you're like, well, okay, cool. So he wants to not go down the traditional route. Instead, he wants to go and say, I'm going to sell this through social media, through direct-to-consumer, through SEO, et cetera. And so therefore taking money from a different type of investor is the key to that. But he didn't like totally get there. It just was not a consistent business story to me.
Yeah. And just breaking down the numbers a little bit more. So he had 2 million in lifetime sales, which 50% came from social media, but really only about 100 or so patients that they had, which is really surprising for me because when you have such a prominent social media presence and you're getting, you know, a good chunk of your revenue coming from there, you would anticipate you would have more presence within that direct to consumer space. You would have more business kind of coming in and continuing to like stay in the cycle. So there is a bit of a, to your point, John, disconnect between like their actual number of customers versus how much they're getting in sales from social. The math's not mathing.
It feels to me like he is a very talented engineer. He's got multiple master's degrees, clearly very, very intelligent and smart. It feels like what he needs is not a shark. What's Lori going to do? Like put him on like QVC?
Right.
You know, like that's like, nah, I don't think that's what he needs right now. I think what he actually needs is the business partner. Mm-hmm. He needs someone who can actually bring together the business strategy much more clearly and say, this is what our distribution strategy is. This is how we're going to build out production capacity. This is how we're going to fund the whole thing and have that all tie together in a way that's going to result in like meaningful growth. And more importantly, for somebody who's going to invest, meaningful return on that investment.
Makes sense. So not really much of a suitable Shark Tank product necessarily.
That was my first thought when I saw this was like, oh gosh, here we go. Every once in a while, someone comes on Shark Tank and is got something that's going to require $100 million to build up production capacity and meet compliance regulations. And it's just as like, you know, I think that Shark Tank investors typically are looking for consumer products. They're looking for things that are cash flow positive businesses that they can get a good return on in a good period of time, not things that are like hyper risky, like venture tech investments or going to have a really long high capital return period, such as something like a medical product device.
Yeah, totally makes sense. So I'm curious to know then, what were your thoughts going into some of the negotiation and the numbers, knowing that a shark may not necessarily be the best kind of decision for a deal to kind of lean into? There was a lot of terminology that was kind of thrown at us. I think a lot of this season has been very up-leveled in terms of negotiation and from what we've seen between like our sharks and founders.
Deal making's good on Shark Tank right now.
Yeah.
People are throwing all sorts of deal structures in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's what happened here. Because Shark Tank investors are like, listen, I do relatively small deals for an investor that expects some sort of much more predictable cash return because I invest more in consumer products, cash flow businesses, et cetera. You know, you have someone like Lori come in and be like, well, listen, I might think about this deal, but I don't ever want to get diluted. Because what Lori's seeing is she's seeing that in order for this business to scale, this entrepreneur and this company are going to have to take on 50 or 100 million more dollars. And so the way that it works, of course, is like, hey, if I make an investment in a company today, if that company takes on future investment in the future, my ownership stake in that company gets diluted. I actually own less and less of the company over time. And investors that do this sort of deal typically know how to create that sort of deal structure such that they're used to what that dilution will look like and they have models for what kind of return they could get over what time periods. And then you have Lori coming in and just being like, well, listen, I kind of just expect like a more predictable return here. And so like, I don't want to get diluted. So if you take any money in the future, what that actually means is that my ownership stake of the company is going to stay static. So if I own 5% of your company today, I will forever own 5% of your company, even if you have to take much, much, much more on, which means all the other investors and the entrepreneur are going to like pay for that additional money out of their share of the company. And so I think that's why you see someone like Lori, that's why they're putting that clause in, is this is not the type of deal that they do. And they're like, well, if you want us to do that sort of deal, we might do it, but we can't be in the business of being diluted down as you take on $50 or $100 million to build out a medical production facility to tap into that market.
Just fair from an investor perspective, looking
totally
at it from
fair.
Investment.
Yeah.
But I think our founder was a little bit more conservative in terms of the amount of equity that he was willing to give up. So I think we kind of saw that a bit where he countered back with, hey, give me 1 million for 2%, but let's throw in some advisory shares here, an additional 1% for each of them. So as we know, a deal kind of counters back, tries to offer a little bit of more advisory shares back to the sharks. Damon says no. Lori agrees to 2% with a 2% advisory, but non-diluted. Then we have a back and forth between non-diluted shares versus diluted shares. Kevin jumps back in at one point saying he'll go in for 5%, just straight equity. So, you know, a deal goes to Kevin. He asks Kevin to go in with Lori and Damon. There was a lot of kind of back and forth here and teaming up kind of across the sharks, despite a deal being a little apprehensive. We netted out with a 6% offer for Lori, Damon, and Kevin, in which they ended up striking a deal, which I found very surprising that he got three sharks for the price of essentially, what, 2% of equity each?
Yeah, for a company that is like just not a Shark Tank type product. I mean, part of it might have been like this is a diversification opportunity for the sharks where they're like, you know, like this is something I don't have a lot of money invested in. And so like getting into an industry like this allows me to like get much more diversification in my portfolio. Plus the product looks good. And of course, helping veterans and people who've lost limbs is like, what an incredible cause to support, you know? So it kind of like might've been a combination of all those things.
Production for today's episode was brought to you by Ari DeSarmo. Editing comes from Robert Hartwig and support from Alfred Schultz. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, or wherever you subscribe to the greatest podcasts ever. That does it for me. See you next week in the tank for another bite. I want to take a break to tell you about a podcast coming to the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. It's called The Next Wave: AI and the Future of Technology. It's hosted by Matt Wolf and Nathan Lands. AI technology is transforming the way we do business, and the media landscape is currently fragmented. The Next Wave is leading the pack on AI technology and how you can apply it to growing your business. Matt and Nathan are leading AI creators and your guiding light in the AI and technology frontier. Listen to The Next Wave wherever you get your podcasts.